All right, it is now around 10:02, and we will start the meeting of the Tax Relief for Pollution Control Property Advisory Committee. And he's working on the microphones, so we should have that ready in a couple of minutes, hopefully. We'll have a recognition of the committee members that are present, or rather the ones that are absent. That's probably easier. And I'm seeing Roland, Mike Nassy, and Cyrus are not here, if I can do the count. That's correct. We're not missing anybody else. So Roland Bieber, Cyrus Reed, and Mike Nassy are absent, or at least at this point. If they arrive, we'll certainly recognize them. As usual, we'll have the policy of the public we want input from the public. So, and you don't have to wait till the end. If you have an issue you want to get in the record, or just give us some feedback in the middle of our conversation, you're welcome just to rise, and we'll recognize you before we move on to the next subject. So, but of course we have a reasonable amount of time that we want to get through our agenda. Not that we have a long agenda today, but we just have a reasonableness general policy there. So I want to recognize the new committee members. Welcome to Charles Allred and Mike Ford, and they can't speak yet because they're not allowed to speak yet. Are you? Okay. As usual, I do have a general comments time for committee members before we get started. And normally we have the microphones ready. So we can pass this around if we need to. I think we do want these be on the microphones so we can be on the recording. We need to give you a little more time before we proceed. Oh. Progress from someone? Or he did it.
Test.
It's not really on until it's green.
Okay. All right, you'll continue to work on this, I suppose, but anyway. All right, as I mentioned, the next item, as I mentioned in the email to all of you, I'm not running for office, but it is time to put this on the agenda, as our bylaws require us to have an election of a chairman every year. So I will step back and allow the group to... I'm available to continue as chairman, but I'm not running for office, as I said. So what are the wishes of the committee?
I'll move Bob's re-coronation.
I'll second that.
All right, we have a motion and a second for Bob Adair to continue as chairman of the advisory committee. Yes, Don Lee. We have a motion from Don Lee and a second from Greg Maxim. Before we vote, do we have any discussion? Can we welcome discussion? All right. Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. All right. We just had Cyrus Reed just walked in the room, and we'll allow you to vote if you want for or against my nomination as chairman.
For.
Okay.
Always got you in the center.
That's all right.
I'm always in the center.
And for the record, it's about 10:06. Cyrus Reed has appeared. So thank you for.
Has appeared with coffee stands.
Yes, right. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, we'll go on to item three. And I understand if we don't want a lot of discussion on this item, and I apologize for getting that late to the group. The format is very similar to what we had last year or the previous years. I tried to go through my notes in the minutes to get to the – if I could pull up. I'm sorry. I should have already had this. I'm looking for my electronic version of the annual report. Most of this is background, as you'll see. And if you get down to the primary 2013 actions taken, it's on page 6. We, as you see, we had a lot of discussion about several issues, but to my knowledge, we only voted on one item, which was just to approve the 2012 annual report. Now, we don't have to vote on this now. We can certainly do it by email. If you'd rather have more time to review that, I would certainly understand that. But I'll open it up for discussion, or what is the preference of the committee? I think you probably have to get one of these microphones.
This one has a full battery. Are there any highlights that you or the staff want to point out to us?
I would welcome comments from the staff. And again, I sent it this weekend, so I don't know if they've had time to review it today. But page 6 has the items that we discussed from my notes in the minutes, the bullet items. And particularly if I overlooked anything that we took action on. Right. Waiting for the number for the cost of the committee and for the estimated time, staff time. And we'll hopefully, and Ron is out sick, and I don't know if Lisa is working on that or. Okay. Okay. All right.
Yep. Testing. Yes, the travel cost and time spent administering the committee, as well as the nominations, is forthcoming. We got a request Friday, and we had an opportunity to gather that information, but we'll get it to you.
I'm more concerned. This is just, I realize I'm just one member, but I'm more concerned about, did we cover all the discussion items and also the action items?
Well, other than the my company name on the page 4, I guess. I haven't had a chance to review it beyond that.
The okay.
Spelling.
All right.
Am I right, Mr. Chairman, that there is a separate report the staff does that has things like the number of applications and the value of applications and kind of an operational report for the program?
That's separate from this annual report, correct? Yes. Yeah. All right. I've made the correction for Rob's company. Any other revisions that need to be made to this?
I would say also that we did. The other thing we did, we didn't really take any action, but it could be an additional bullet item, is we did review that operational report of the agency, right? They came out with their...
Okay.
So I think that's another item we took on.
All And was that last year, though? I'll check again to see if it was 2013. Basically, I know we reviewed the fees structure at one time. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, but that wasn't that part of there.
That was part of their annual report was the fee structure. That was my remembrance, if that's a word.
Okay. I'll check into that. I was thinking it might be in our 2012 report.
Remembrance of things past.
Yeah, all right.
For those who are comp lit majors.
Okay. All right, any other items? Oh, okay. Thank you. I'll make that change too. Well, for 2013, were you? No. Is this correct for 2013, though? It is not? Okay. All right, I can side note that if you want. All right. Are we comfortable with making a motion, or would you rather do that by email after you have more time to review it?
I'll move approval.
All right. We have a motion to approve the report as drafted with amendments that are suggested today. We have a second.
I'll second it.
All right. We also have a second, also with the understanding that the red items that need to be added later, we'll add those once we get that information from TCEQ staff. Is that acceptable? I'm not trying to change your motion. Just want to make sure we have an understanding on that.
That's what I meant.
Okay. All right. Okay. We have a motion and from Don Lee, a second from Greg Maxim. Any other discussion? No discussion. Hearing none. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those approved, no. We have a motion to approve the drafted annual report with the amendments as discussed today and those forthcoming from the TCEQ staff. All right. We'll move to the next item, and I have 4A, an overview or an update from TCEQ staff. I thought that might be helpful, and I realize some things may be pending, and but I'll let you talk.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Chance Gooden, Prop 2 Advisory Committee, TCEQ. Okay, an overview of the rule. As you are aware, we, or may not, we are proposing a rule on Wednesday, Commission Agenda, February 26th. The start of the comment period, public comment period, will be March 14th, and then we'll have a public hearing on April 3rd. The end of that comment period will close April 14th.
I'm sorry, we slowed down. I'm making a note of that. It starts the March 14th?
March 14th is the start of our public comment period. We'll have a public hearing April 3rd. And the close of the comment period is April 14th.
Okay.
As you're aware, some items that we change every time we open the rule up is the Tier 1 table list and expedited review list. It's required in statute that we review that every 3 years. In addition to that, we're implementing House Bill 1897, which limits the number of days we have to review an application. So specifically, we looked at the rule to limit the days in our technical review process to 230 days, and this will allow at least 100 to 135 days to do the appeal process if an determination is appealed by either party. During that time, you know, the commissioner, the chief clerk's office will submit a schedule for reply briefs, well, briefs and reply briefs, and then upon that, they'll set it for an agenda to be heard by the commission. So that was our attempt to get it assured that we won't exceed 365 days as House Bill 1897 is requiring us to do. We talked about this a little bit in the last two advisory committee meetings about what our current length of technical review process is, and we don't foresee any problems with exceeding those days. In fact, in 2012, 95% of the technical reviews were completed within 16 days. The other thing that we are required to do is to look at the 18 categories of equipment as well as the Tier 1 table to see if any items need to be added, revised, or removed. So that's required every 3 years. There was no revisions proposed to the expedite review list. However, we looked at revising or removing 9 items. Well, we revised many items, but it was non-substantial, just misspellings and clarifications. But we removed 9 items from the Tier 1 table due to the last time we made a rule revision, we changed the definition of byproduct to marketable product. In doing so, some items in there that dealt with recycling were no longer eligible. So those are no longer considered 100% because they do some form of recycling. And then the other items, there was just no environmental rule for them to comply with. It may be a rule out there, wildlife and fisheries, but there was not an environmental rule that required them to install that equipment. There were 9. I can go through them item by item if you would like, but there it's also available online as it's going to.
I'll admit my negligence for not being on top of that. Would you go through those 9 items right quick?
Certainly. Item 1 is A42, chlorofluorocarbon replacement projects. So basically there's no environmental rule or regulation that requires a replacement of refrigerants. The second one is halon replacement projects, and that's the same thing. There's no environmental rule to replace halon with different gas. It's A43. A67, automatic dynamers. It's the use of an automotive dynamer does not control, monitor, or prevent water or land pollution. Item W58, water recycling system. Again, the change of byproduct to marketable product precludes them from getting 100% just for the sheer fact that they recycle water. And then W62, recycled water cleaning systems. Same reason. S27, concrete reclaiming equipment. Same reason, recycled material meets the definition of marketable product. M5, solvent recovery system, is recycled solvents meets definition of marketable product. M17, low NOx combustion system for drilling rigs. NOx controls installed on an internal combustion engine associated with drilling rigs are located elsewhere on the Tier 1 table, so it's not that we're removing it. It's just dual. It's in another place on the Tier 1 table.
So duplicate. What is the... I could look it up. I'm sorry. But
it's an M17.
N17?
M.
Oh, M17.
It's a Mary.
Yeah, right. But what is the... Where is it? Another place. The other one, yeah.
I don't have that on my notes here. I'd have to go and look.
Okay.
If you look at the actual rule language, it'll show where we okay. Line item that out. But I can get back with y'all on that if y'all need me to. M20 is a fish and other aquatic organism protection equipment, preventing fish and other aquatic organisms from becoming entrained and impinged is not an environmental rule. There isn't a rule. There is a rule in wildlife and fisheries, but it's not an environmental rule. So, the other item that we did in regards to this rulemaking is to update Chapter 18 to be consistent with the November 2010 Chapter 17 rulemaking we did. We just, in that rulemaking, we updated the Tier 1 table in the expiry review list, and we're replacing those updates in Chapter 18. Those of you who are not familiar with Chapter 18, it's the rollback tax relief program. Those that qualify for rollback relief must install equipment intended to meet environmental requirement and be funded out of maintenance and operation funds. To date, this program has been in since 1995, and we've received four applications, and only two have been approved at it. So it's not a highly used chapter. So we just felt we needed to blow the dust off of that and keep it current with Chapter 17. Again, proposal is on Wednesday, and then the public comment period starts March 14th. There will be a public hearing on April 3rd. It'll close, the comment period will close on April 14th, and we are currently on schedule to adopt on August the 6th. Is there any questions?
So it will be adopted by the commission on August 6th?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, so that's a faster timeline than normally it's in December.
No.
I thought our discussion earlier was backing up from December to go through the executive director. Maybe my recollection is incorrect.
Well, that was for proposal.
Okay.
Yeah, rulemaking is a two-prong process. You have the proposal phase and then an adoption phase.
Okay.
So the December part where we were reviewing was for proposal.
Okay.
So.
I'm trying to remember. Have we, as a body, previously on rulemakings, said here are some comments from the advisory committee, or have we just sort of left it up to each individual members? I just don't remember. I have the feeling that we did put in some comments as an advisory.
We did. I did. I think in 2010 when it related to the hydrotreaters. In the environmental benefit, but basically, it was mostly to
the mainly thing that y'all did was discuss the outline of the rule as we presented it to you. Staff came up with some language from some discussions and some internal discussions from the staff, and then presented it at a later advisory committee. And then that language appeared into the rulemaking. So you certainly can make your comment individually, or if y'all wanted to have a unified comment on the rulemaking as a committee, however you, that's why the comment period is, you know, a month long to be able to do that.
That's a motion, right? Saying that we've looked at it and that we don't see any. Sorry. If we wanted, we would
pass a motion here saying that we have looked at the proposed rules changes and have this conclusion on it, which might just be there's really nothing here.
Either way, it moves forward with or
and there's nothing
inconsistent
with it, with the views, and we unanimously endorse them or something like that. We could do that, and I wouldn't have a problem doing that.
This is just a mechanism question. So say we did have a concern with something in the rules, and we'd probably be like anybody else in the public. I realize that's the purpose of the public comments. What would be our deadline? Would our deadline be April 14th?
April 14th. Like
everybody else? Okay.
Yes. I mean, and you would just, you would, if you want that comment to be your comment, then you would just state your name as the person that's commenting and supply that in writing. Basically, you just submit it to the agency and send it to one of us, or you can send it to our rules. There's tons of places where you can send your comments in to, or you can unify. And if y'all have a unanimous comment among the committee, you can make that comment from the Tax Relief Pollution
okay.
Property Advisory Committee. However you feel.
Okay.
Are we scheduled to have a meeting before the end of that comment period, or probably not?
I think it'd be a good idea if we do. That's just my initial thought.
And we, if we could...
We're only required to meet quarterly, but of course we have met more often, and this is probably a good example of.
And we have in the past also done phone conferences and just scheduled it and said any member of the public. So if it were difficult, I just know that a lot of the folks here are involved with tax work, et cetera, so it may be hard to find a date that works for everybody. But a phone call is...
We can certainly do a conference call.
Is often easier if we can't find a date where everyone can physically be here.
Conference call for the committee, it's my understanding that I don't want to speak out of line for TCQ, but it's my understanding that TCQ would prefer. In other words, we've had an experience with a conference call that you'd rather not get into that situation again.
Well, the very first conference call we had a couple of administrative things that we just had an issue with, people putting us on hold with some background.
Yeah, right. Phone.
But since then, we've had two or three conference calls that went very well. And so we're not against a conference call. Y'all can certainly meet by conference, as it's at your pleasure if you want to do that every time. It's up to you guys.
All right.
Thank you.
You might need to get back up, but does anyone have any initial concerns about the items that they've listed? Yeah. Yeah, I think some of us might have an initial concern, and particularly it seems like the commission has taken a position on recycling. I know we've talked in the past. There's been some reluctance to go there, but just by looking at this list, that most of it's recycling related. So.
Can you be more specific? I mean, it often helps when we talk about a specific example. Do you mean like the solvent recycling or the water? I mean, I was thinking about, as he was saying that, I was thinking about this too, and I was thinking, well, if somebody were putting in a, wastewater recycling, and they said, instead of meeting my discharge permit, by putting wastewater treatment and then discharging it the river, I'm actually going to recycle that and reuse it, that's still meeting an environmental law, and that probably would comply. But maybe what they're saying is it's not Tier 1 because until you look at the particulars, you don't know if it's being used. I'm not sure. So maybe they're saying because it's going to depend on the particular cases of how you're using that water recycling, whether it's being used in internally or whether it's being used to sell a product, without looking at the particulars, it's hard to put things on a Tier 1 list. That would be my guess is what they're thinking. But certainly there could be some water recycling that would be 100%. I think it would just depend on the situation, maybe.
So am I reading between the lines that the staff could be open to recycling, but it would be a Tier 2 or a Tier 3 possibly?
That is correct. It's no longer to be submitted as a Tier 1 $150 application fee. It would have to be submitted as a Tier 3 $2,500 or two.
Is my example correct that you could have a wastewater recycling that was 100%, you know, depending on what it was used for?
You could, but you'd have to go through the CAP process.
And so if I read your material correctly, the basis of this is that y'all now believe that the recycled water is a marketable byproduct. Is that right? Did I get that right, or am I dreaming that?
On a case-by-case basis, we don't know. We'd have to look at that on a case-by-case.
Right, it can be a marketable byproduct.
It just
so
can't
therefore
say
100%. You need to see it. You need to see the application and figure that out.
Correct. It's more man-hours for that.
Correct.
Yeah. It also seems that we've moved from, of course, there was a time when there were items on the Tier 1 list that were less than 100%. And I thought the reason for taking those off is because no one TCQ could find in the record of how that was calculated. So it seems like we've gone from that to basically saying Tier 1 is only 100%. So in other words, could there be something on the Tier 1 list that's less than 100% if it was documented?
We'd have to have documentation for that.
Okay. So, okay, you answered my question. You're not saying absolutely we can't go back to something less than 100%. Okay.
Can someone?
So just following up on Bob's point, let's say we resolve this whole Herzig issue and we determine that Herzigs were going to be valued at 35%. I'm just throwing out a number for throwing in a number. Is there the potential that in future rulemaking you could say Herzigs are going to be valued at 35%? Done? Or is the thinking that you would still have to do it case by case?
It's too soon for us to know at this point. We don't have enough consistency between applications to know that right now. So, apologize for all the microphone issues. I don't know if y'all are aware, but LCRA and a lot of water right issues are going on with the agency. And they had a hearing here on Monday, and it started at like 9 in the morning, didn't get done till midnight. So that's why all the batteries are running out on these microphones and things aren't working. They broke everything. So I apologize for all the
we'll try to finish
audio
then.
Complications. Yes, sir. We sent the second round of notice deficiencies to each of the applicants, just wanting to reach out and clarify a few rule items and opportunities to clarify some of the CAP equations that were supplied to us. We've received a few of those responses back, and we're continuing to receive those responses. So that's where. Soon.
While we're on this subject, it seems maybe I'm overly analyzing this, but it seems since with the Herzig situation, until it's resolved, it's hard for us to have discussions about Tier 3. Realizing, in other words, we could come up with some advice that be totally dismissed because there's this parallel path going on with the Herzigs.
Any discussions the advisory committee has on the CAP will have no bearing on the applications we have in-house because anything y'all do won't take effect. Yes, it won't take an effect until after
right.
that. So, I mean, so if y'all have some ideas about that, let loose.
And I realize it's outside of our scope to talk about specific applications, but to Cyrus's point, if it was at, say, we'll stick with his 35% example, I could see that, especially if there's enough data that finally comes where the clusters of the calculations of a significant sample would come in that range. I could see that, but that's just me. And this is going on. Otherwise, I don't see any end in sight. Yeah. I mean, not that we are the only group that can save this situation, but
the information that's been supplied by all of our applicants thus far, it's all been still available. It's all out there for y'all to review. I don't see a consistent percentage as of right now. So
I know there's some outliers, but I have seen some clusters.
So.
All right.
I was ready to go with 35%. Like the legislative session, let's just make it. Bye-bye. Ignore those comments. Those were just...
That's why I didn't put it.
Thank you.
Do we have any comments from the public at this point? I realize this is a sensitive matter, so as long as things are being discussed among attorneys, certain things will not be addressed here. I realize that. Okay. Any other comments specifically about the items that were listed here? With this in mind, I'll send an email out, and as we all know, it's extremely difficult to find a date for 13 of us to get together. But I will certainly try to do that tomorrow morning is my plan, or maybe this afternoon. So be thinking about your calendars and look at your calendars, and we'll get together. I think so. Yeah, I would say realistically before that, if we'd have to draft something in writing, a response. So, just arbitrarily saying April 10th, something before then.
May I offer you up a solution? We on April 3rd for the public hearing, we'll have this room reserved for that day. Just so you know, if you have a public hearing. You're here to make comments on the rule. It's not going to be in this type of fashion. We'll have a time period about 15 to 20 minutes before the public hearing starts, so we can have a conversation about your concerns about the rulemaking. But once the public hearing convenes, we are just solely there to listen to make for your comments to be heard. But that's always a date that you could use.
Well. In my opinion, it seems like we should meet before the 3rd in case we have something as a committee that we need to.
Okay, well, the comment period closes on the 14th.
On April 14th?
Yes.
Yes,
the hearing's on the 3rd.
Right. I'm just saying as a committee, we might want to meet before April 3rd so we can prepare, if we want, to speak at the April 3rd meeting. Sound reasonable? Okay, I realize it might be hard to get to lock in a date. And I will try Fridays again. It seems to be best for most. But
I agree we should meet before the 3rd, because if we don't all see eye to eye and there's some dissent, then those people would probably want to testify at the hearing. But if we wait till that morning, it's too compressed time period to get that organized.
Okay.
And maybe we might be able to escape without having a special meeting, given if we all have a chance to keep looking at the rules. I know I looked at the rules last week and misread them. I had a concern, gone away. Looked over in doing that because I was concerned about. I started looking over all the rules. Followed it from our perspective. Just my association's perspective, we probably don't have any further issues with the rules. We think that what they've drafted, I think they've definitely or got the intent of the bill from last session, and then the 3-year review that's kind of more of a technical issue that we don't know as much about. What I'm saying is that maybe if we all have a chance to look at that, we might all be able to just say, hey, Bob, I don't need to meet. And we might be able to escape having a meeting.
Okay. How about I send you an email and at least try to put something on the calendar. And I won't send a notice for publication for hearing until we decide we in fact want to meet. All right. Chance.
I'm sorry, administration is my job, and I just had to offer another maybe suggestion. Maybe we can set a date for the advisory committee to review the rule. At that date, you asked if they had any comments from a deadline from the review date, and then from that, then you will know if a meeting needs to be set. So, like, for instance, next week, have the rule review read and reviewed. If you have comments, send them to me. That way you'll know to set a meeting. Just a suggestion.
Okay.
Maybe helpful.
And I'll acknowledge probably if I'd have been doing my homework adequately, we might have had this information today to review. But I'll get back to you as soon as we can. All right. That's 4A and B. And C, we touched on that a little bit, at least once every 3 years. Anything, and of course we've had this on the last couple of meetings agenda, but we're getting toward the end of our chance, so that's why I put it back on there again for us to just discuss any concerns about this rule or any other rule. I will say I've heard some feedback from some people, and I don't know if this could be in a rule or not. It's as controversial, I realize, but there is some frustration by some people that HB 1897, although it says a year, there doesn't seem to be much teeth in it, that if TCQ goes beyond a year, what happens? So I throw that as a thought for possible discussion. I realize I'm going out on a limb on that, but I'm giving you feedback.
So the way I read the rules as proposed, and I would ask for staff to comment on this, the way I read the rules as proposed, if they follow the rules, they will complete their review within 1 year. So if they're gone past a year, you're going to have an action for violating the rules against TCEQ. But if they can't complete their work within the year because of a lack of response from the applicant, then they have the authority to end the application.
Mm-hmm.
Did I get that right?
And by the way, I realize if an applicant is getting very close to, I think, getting the answer that they want, they wouldn't want that hard date. I realize that because that would, I mean, if I were in your position, you could easily say, okay, if I have to say yes or no now, the answer is no.
In the Chapter 17, Section 12, Application Review Schedule C, it says a technical application review process is limited to a total of 230 days from the date the application is declared administrative complete. We will not be able to exceed 230 days to allow for the remainder of the year to go through the appeal process.
Okay. If they go beyond that, that's up to the attorneys to fight that out. So. Okay. Any other comments about the rules?
The item C, were you, I didn't understand the question. Is the question, are we doing our job of reviewing the Tier 1 through the present rulemaking? Or are you just asking if what's on the Tier 1 is appropriate and we have other comments? In other words, is C procedural? Are we doing our job of, are we in TCQ doing our job of reviewing that Tier 1 list? Or is it, do we have the Tier 1 list correct?
I think it's the former. It's basically,
are we doing our job?
My intent was, this is, we're getting close to our last chance to review this.
Okay.
And if we take no action, then it will go forward as is.
Yeah.
Our RSTCQ recommends.
Yeah, I'd previously asked the question, and I think the answer was yes, just to make sure, and you folks in oil and gas would know better than I the particulars, but just to make sure that we had the items on the list that are being required by the, you know, and I know all these things go through court cases, and but the new EPA standard on oil and gas facilities that's kind of going into effect this year, you know, for example, there's some new requirements on condensate tanks, and just making sure that those items that oil and gas facilities do have to put on to comply with those rules are on the Tier 1 list, because that's, I think that's important. So I don't know if you're checking with your kind of air emissions oil and gas folks to make sure that what's on the list is covered in the new rules.
As you're aware, the way things get on the Tier 1 table is we have a number of applications that come in that are Tier 2s that are not on the list, and we see that they are indeed 100%. Once we have sufficient evidence of that, that's why we have a 3-year review of the tier of the list. Once the rule opens up again in 3 years, and we have sufficient data for that, those items then get
added. But you don't, it's not that you anticipate and say, these new regs are coming down, so therefore we're going to add these things. It's really, the regs come out, people start applying, and then you add
it. Correct. That's what the paragraph before the preceding Tier 1 table says.
Chance, if I can clarify, this goes back to the HRSGs. And by the way, I do not have any HRSGs in my company that I represent.
Yes, I know.
So... So, but I'm asking if in the future, so the HRSGs, you're saying the HRSGs would have to be future applications would be, have to go as a Tier 2 before we could ultimately get it on a Tier 1 if we chose to put it on Tier 1? Or do you think we if we had enough data, enough information that we could advise to put it on a Tier 1?
I have no opinion about that either way. It depends on how the application is submitted and what is supplied in the application for us to know that what they supplied us is sufficient enough to say, yes, this equipment is 100% pollution control and can be moved to the Tier 1 table.
Well, even if it's 35%, and we decide that they're 35% and be... I'm going to stay with his example.
35. He wants 35.
No, I'm staying with it. I'm intentionally not mentioning another.
35?
I'm not intentionally.
Stay on.
Yeah, right.
Sounds like y'all are talking recommendation stuff.
What you're saying is if you do. Hold on.
If there's sufficient enough evidence that is deemed 100%, right now everything that's on a Tier 1.
I'm talking Tier 2s.
Right. If it's consistently used for 100% and the item is not already on the Tier 1 table, we can move it to the Tier 1 table when the next time the rule is opened up for review.
The same would go for Tier 3s if you had a bunch of Tier 3s.
Correct. Correct. If we had the CAP analysis showed that the equipment was yielding 100%
pollution control. The key word is sufficient.
Control. I mean, that's the way the rule reads.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is if you have a Tier 2, which is 100%, 0 or 100%.
That's not on the list.
And that it's not on the list. So once you rule it to be 100%, whatever it was, that piece of equipment, then does it go into a pile for that Tier 2,
correct,
that type of equipment?
It moves to the Tier 1 table.
And how many has that been done since the...
I haven't had any since I've administered this program. I'm sure Ron has some historical knowledge of how things have moved from being a Tier 2 to a Tier 1, but he's not here today, so I'd have to ask him if he has some stats on that.
I mean, there are a couple items on the Tier 1 list that are 100% of the incremental cost difference between an item with the pollution control feature and without. Obviously, if it's an incremental cost difference, it would never be filed as a Tier 2. It'd have to go Tier 3, right?
That's correct.
How would it ever make it to the Tier 1 list?
Well, that's incremental cost. That's a section in the application that we allow them to...
But if you were
capital
adding...
Capital cost old and capital cost new.
Adding new items to the Tier 1 list that could fall into that incremental cost difference category.
I can't say I don't know those items. We don't have the applications to decide that right now. We haven't gotten anything to tell us otherwise.
So maybe through the public comment process, those things can be.
The key is we don't have anything in house. We have to have something in house for us to look at some possibilities or. You know, this is what we may think that could come down. We have to have actually tangible things that are going to be they're requesting us to look at for us to be able to know if something could be incremental cost. And it's new equipment. It's not any equipment that's already on the list. That's the thing. A lot of people have these things, but most of the time that equipment's already on the Tier 1 table already.
I noticed some things that were removed maybe the last time. Some items that were partial got converted to from, like, say, 50% exempt to 100% exempt of the cost difference. And some items didn't. They were just completely removed from the list. So,
I'd have to go back and look at the preamble from the 2010 rulemaking to explain what it was because I can't remember those.
Okay.
Sorry. Apologize. Thanks.
Thank you, Chance.
Thank you.
Any other discussions on the equipment at this point?
I guess this is just a general comment, and I don't really presume to, you know, say that I have an opinion either way just yet without further reviewing, but seeing the water recycling projects as being part of the items being removed is a little concerning. Just, and again, I think we just need to think long and hard and kind of digest this a little bit, maybe get some information from TCEQ about how many applications you're receiving or what kind of dollar value we're talking about as far as, you know, that's being given use determinations. Seeing what water, and I mean, my experience is more specific to Central Texas, but seeing, you know, what kind of drought we have and water being such an important resource that it is, and questioning what value you could possibly apply to, say, stormwater or gray water that would make it less than 100% exempt for water recycling equipment. I just think we need to think long and hard and kind of digest some of this information a little bit more before we talk about disincentivizing industry for doing water recycling projects, specifically for water. You know, a lot of industries, they've sort of picked the low-hanging fruit and done a lot of these, you know, big projects that save a ton of money, but you've got a lot of these other ones out there that, you know, there may be some sort of cost avoidance ROI that's 10, 15 years, and, you know, a lot of companies aren't going to pursue big water recycling projects because of the cost, and every little bit helps, and when you take away the incentive and you throw on an application fee that changes from $150 to, what, $1,500, $2,500? I can't recall what they are for the Tier 2 and Tier 3, but,
you start to throw out those economics quite a bit, and for something with such a large ROI to begin with, you really I worry that we're going to start disincentivizing doing water recycling when, given the conditions we're in currently, that just may not be a good position to put ourselves in. So, I mean, just a general comment, I think we really need to digest specifically those two before we just pull them off.
Along those lines, I was trying to find it in the rules, the words compelling evidence. So apparently TCEQ has determined compelling evidence to pull these off the list. Is that a correct statement? Yes.
Uh-huh. Yes, sir. The compelling evidence aspect is those items were moved for one reason or another. It neither had an environmental law requiring that equipment, or it was due to the definition change of byproduct to marketable product.
Which begs the question to me of why was it on the list to begin with? Apparently someone determined there was an environmental law or regulation.
Okay, well, those do have environmental law and regulations, but however, if it's taken off the list for 100% pollution control, it was taken off because it needs to go through some type of determination to determine what the marketable product of that equipment is for a percentage. It's not saying we're not going to look at them. We're not going to look at them as a Tier 1.
Right. So so I think we're talking in a circle here in a sense, but basically you've determined, not you specifically, TCEQ, has determined that Tier 1 will only be 100%, and I realize that's what it says now.
Yes, the Tier 1 table is items that have been deemed 100% pollution control.
But that's not to say it couldn't go back to where there was HRSEC's at 35% or whatever, being on Tier 1.
So one of the things in my mind is one of these recycling projects, if it goes in Tier 2 and they say, there is no marketable product, then it automatically gets exempted, right? I mean, it gets approved as exempt.
We'd have to look at that.
Right. Yeah. But assuming somebody made the argument that the byproduct is not marketable, then it would be approved. So
if it's just one, I don't have a. We have to have some consistency among a piece of equipment that's used the same way.
I understand. For us to know that. I'm just after the fact that you've moved it off the list because you're not sure whether it has a marketable byproduct. But if somebody files a Tier 2, and through their explanation shows it is not there is no marketable byproduct, then it would be approved. So, I understand your concern, but I'm pointing out, and it raises the price of the inspection, but it doesn't necessarily eliminate a lot of these recycling projects. It just means it has further review.
Yeah, we have to look at it to find out what the recycling, what the value of what the recycling is. It's no longer 100% pollution control.
Have you ever received a recycling application under Tier 2 that said that the material being recycled was not a marketable product?
Not off the top of my head, I don't know the information. I'd have to talk with staff to find out if we had something.
Could the ability of a recycled water, whether it's a marketable byproduct or not, could that depend upon where in the state it is? Seems to me Beaumont's a heck of a lot different than El Paso in these regards.
If the cost of disposing of the water is more than recycling, it could be a factor.
Is that part of the reasoning that y'all have in wanting to take it off of Tier 1? Is there so many issues now with water?
Well, it's just the sheer fact that, our evidence is we no longer can just say this recycling is 100% because in the recycling, you're recycling something. So we need to look at that to determine if there is a value to that. So we want y'all to supply that information.
On the water, we look at the cost avoidance of not having to purchase the water. So we have done a few zero liquid discharge applications.
How is that a marketable product?
Because you're not having to purchase it. So if you look at the marketable product definition, it talks about returning the material to the process. That's one of the ways you get to be marketable product.
So if you're not buying water.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not buying water, then that's a marketable product because you didn't buy it.
Well, it's the cost avoidance. So that's how we determine the marketable product value of the water that you're reusing.
I think in that case you'd be comparing apples and oranges. I mean, it depends on the project, of course, but I mean, if you're recycling gray water, I mean, you'd have a hard time arguing that gray water has a marketable value compared to, say, municipally supplied potable, drinkable water. And furthermore, you could also potentially have a stormwater recycling project where, I mean, I don't think anyone could argue that stormwater has any marketable value whatsoever. And, you know, if you're able to reclaim stormwater, use it to irrigate with, and avoid buying city water to irrigate a property, I don't know how you could compare. Right, but I don't understand how the stormwater, I mean, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, I think there are some situations that, you know, where water could be considered a marketable product. I don't think we can deny that, but I just think maybe we need to look at it a little bit closer. Maybe there's certain types of water. Gray water might be an example. Stormwater might be an example where you could tweak the language on the Tier 1 list to only apply to certain types of streams of water that, you know, we might be able to argue that have no marketable value. And
the two that we did that I can remember off the top of my head were Brazos Electric and El Paso Electric. And they did as a Tier 3. They were zero liquid discharge applications. And they determined the value of the water by, they had the quantity of water they were recycling, and they applied to it the rate that they would have paid to purchase water from the city.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the process they used. I question and in that situation that may be appropriate, but there may be other situations where I gave a stormwater example, and I mean, I'm not talking zero discharge. There are other opportunities, other projects that you know may simply be a reduction or, you know, I don't know. I think we just need to look at it a little closer before we just pull it off completely. Maybe
well,
there's
I do have
some language changing.
One example relative to the paper industry, a project that was done where basically contaminated wastewater that was being discharged to the waste treatment plant because they were having a little bit of trouble meeting their discharge limitations and their permit, this company came up with a way to take the raw contaminated water and just run it back through, and that way they didn't have the discharge. They weren't up against the discharge limit, but it wasn't raw water they were conserving. They were reusing water that was already contaminated. They just found a way to make it work. It wasn't ideal, but they found a way to make it work. That might be a scenario Mr. Castor is contemplating. I don't know.
Well, or another example of here in the city, if you are over the Edwards Aquifer, you have to have reapply your stormwater runoff. You can't essentially. There are certain circumstances, but most of the time you have to re-irrigate with stormwater that's collected that runs off of a parking lot or an industrial facility. So that would be a water reuse project that's stipulated by rule that you're required to reuse that water on site. And there would be no marketable value of stormwater runoff, in which case, you know, you've taken that off the tier one list, but it's very clearly stipulated in a rule that, you know, you have to reuse that water on site. That's another example. Granted, I don't know if we really have enough information to make any kind of decision or any, you know, I've just wanted to open it up and bring it out there and just say I think it bears a little bit further scrutiny before we pull it, you know, just flat out pull it off the tier one list.
So,
There are some stormwater items on the table. So I think that you could get that stormwater reapplication project through that tier one table item in the W area.
So, Robert, in listening, and I think I'm understanding. It's a lot that you say there that I agree with, but it leads me to the opposite conclusion, that we don't know enough to leave a broad general category on of saying that all property in that condition is 100% exempt, when we know, as you said, that there are some situations where that property is used to produce a marketable byproduct that is water. And so the staff needs evidence with which to delineate those situations that are and those situations that are not. And if we have evidence that the Category 1 property as it currently is includes property that produces a marketable byproduct, I think they're required to remove it from the list. I don't think it can stay on the list. That's just the conclusion I get to listening to this discussion and our predicates, our collective predicates we all agree to.
Yeah, I guess I would say, Don, that I don't know if we're necessarily saying different things. I think maybe as written, yeah, it should probably come off the list, but, you know, there may be some language changes to it that would clarify that, you know, we could probably, and again, we'd need some time, but could probably maybe come up with some examples of situations where we know we're very obviously 100%, and, you know, they don't need to go through the more expensive application fee, which it, on some smaller
and
scale
we would
projects,
agree on those. If we can find those and define them, then we'd agree to get to have those on the tier one list.
Yeah, I mean, my only concern is, you know, with some of the smaller scale projects, and my industry in particular, we're not doing, you know, massive projects, and sometimes the property tax avoidance or savings that would come with doing a use determination application doesn't even pay for the application fee, and in which case, you know, it sort of just knocks you out of the program completely if you're doing relatively small scale projects here and there. So just some kind of concerns. I'll see if I can come up with some examples and maybe we can discuss in our next meeting, and if anyone else has any, you know, we can.
Well, that would be a good reason for us.
See, that is a good reason for us to have a meeting. If we have some good examples like that, that we can, we've got the evidence for staff needs, and we can propose amending the tier one to put something on that gets that project on the list and gets it its exemption, whereas we don't need that going through tier three and tier two calculations.
I've got a question for staff. Remind me, are things on the Tier 1, is there a, can you kick them out because there's not a legal necessity or responding to a rule or regulation, or is it automatically assumed that that's built in? Because I heard you say earlier one of the reasons you were kicking this off was there might be cases where there wasn't a legal necessity.
Yeah,
tell me how that works.
There is a couple of items that are on there that there is no environmental rule or regulation. Not saying there once was. That rule could have existed in years past. It could have been repealed. But as of today, there's no rule requiring those two projects. So that's one reason it can be pulled off. Now, remember the CSC projects and the Hallon, but the original list was created before my time in a work group. So I don't know the mechanisms of how a lot of the items were put on the list originally. So we're dealing with an original list.
So if you're on Tier 1, it's an absolute exemption, even if in a specific case there's no rule or regulation?
No.
No. You have to prove that in the application as well, even for Tier 1 items.
The Tier 1 table is intended to be a helpful tool for the purposes of the application process.
Okay.
So people can say, oh, well, there's where my equipment is, and it is used for 100%.
Right.
That's what it is. It's a go-to list.
But there's still a weed-out process.
It doesn't require anybody to 17 is just a mechanism for them to know how to apply for. There is that rule requirement still.
That it be in response to a rule or regulation.
Yes.
If I may, with regard to water, I would stand in concurrence with Robert. I really would. I think those questions need to be answered. We need to take a look at it. We want to take the Herzogs at 35%. I think we take water at 95%. To equivocate the phrase compelling evidence, I would say that for public comments, we go find rice farmers and ask whether or not there's any compelling evidence that we shouldn't do everything we could do to conserve all the water that we can here in Texas. I appreciate you speaking to it, Robert.
Hello.
Any
okay.
More comments?
I don't know if we could request, as part of this discussion for the next meeting, maybe we could request from staff examples of some of those applications that they've looked at, so we'd have some examples and maybe be able to refine that Tier 1 description. I don't know if we need to do that in writing. So, you know, any application involving water recycling, either on Tier 1 or Tier 3, and I don't know if we put a date on it, you know, from January 1, 2010 to the present, or I don't know how easy that would be for staff to sort. I mean, we could go back all the way. I don't know how many applications. If we're talking about 5 applications or 500, I don't know how many there have been. Not many. So from the very, if we went all the way to the beginning, is that you can't? What can you easily find? Maybe some of the early ones are a little harder to. I don't know what's available or digitally available. I would make the request that you make available to the committee applications involving water recycling that you can easily get, you know, within reason. So I don't want you to spend hours and hours looking back at paper, but those that you can easily get as examples, and knowing we're not going to be commenting in any way on the decisions made, it's just to use for discussion purposes.
Well, I can think of three now, the two I mentioned, and also the one that Mr. Allred mentioned. It rang a bell.
But so there aren't
not a lot.
There aren't other examples of smaller stormwater or gray water recycling systems that have been, I don't mean just Tier 3, I mean even ones that were approved as Tier 1 that might give us some.
Stormwater is, there is at least one Tier 1 item that covers stormwater. Mm-hmm. And so they would have just filed that way. And they don't normally address the recycling aspect.
Okay. Well, if there are Tier 1 that specifically mentioned recycling. That code, if we could see those. I mean, maybe there's a way to search it and find it.
The Edwards Aquifer Code? I can...
No, I just mean the code that's being contemplated is being that they're saying they're going to take out. If there are Tier 1 applications that applied through that code, it'd be interesting for us to see those. I mean, it could be that nobody's using that code, so it doesn't really matter. So we're having a discussion that's not even that important. But if there are Tier 1 applications that are using that code, it'd be nice to see them.
Which one is what is W50? Oh, that's the recycling. Okay, I'll look.
I probably should stand and just do this. All right, any other comments in Section 4 regarding rules, including other areas that we haven't handled or discussed? And I say that because the rules require at least every 3 years, but I don't think it precludes us from talking about other rules. So that's why I put that as a catch-all. All right. Have we exhausted this? Sounds like we've exhausted this part. Then I'll move on to other business. Any old business we need to discuss? Any new business? I'll bring up one new item that, and I was just thinking of this from recent conversations I've had with a couple of folks, and that is training. It seems it would be helpful for applicants to have an opportunity to at least come here or have a conference call or something once in a while. It's a pretty cumbersome process, even for those of us that work in the area quite a bit. So and not that we should necessarily emulate Louisiana. I'm not saying that, but I am aware that Louisiana Economic Development has seminars every other month. And I don't know if that's too often, but it might. It's just a thought that you might want to consider, at least occasionally, having an opportunity for applicants to ask you about the process and how can we make the process more efficient. And I realize they could come here and advise the committee, but just a thought. I'll just bring it up as a thought. If anybody else has any other comments that you can come in on now or later.
That's a good idea. If people are, I think that's a good idea. And if people can file an application one time where you guys only reviewing it one time, I think in the long run it could save the TCEQ some time and money versus, you know, where people having to resubmit them and you guys have to look at them three or four times. Or at least that's been my experience. I just concur. I think a training session would be beneficial. Now, how many people, you know, how you get the word out on something like that, I don't know. But I do, especially now where it has gotten much more difficult. In the old days, you know, especially even Tier 1, if it was on the list, it was a fairly painless process, whereas now you have to have process flow diagrams, and there's just many more. And like you said, for us that do it a lot, it's still a cumbersome process, or can be.
All right. So that's just informal advice, not formal advice from the committee. Just something to think about. Any other comments?
Well, I know working with Alyssa and Ron the last couple of years trying to get a handle on what they want to see in pretty much most applications, trying to nail that down to where you turn it in and they've got everything they need to make their decision and you get a use determination back and not an NOD. I was able to get to that point within the last few months, you know, kind of navigate that because, you know, when you fill out the application, you might think you put everything in it, but if their knowledge of certain industries, you know, isn't as well defined as others, they may need more. And, you know, I found that the more block flow diagrams, the better. Special conditions, the air permits, you know, and you're referencing those items, that really helps them get through it. But I think most people that file this, I mean, especially ones that are not environmental consultants, they don't see that in the guidance document necessarily, and so they fill it out the best they can, and when they get the pushback with all the questions on the NOD, sometimes it can be a little overwhelming. So I think the seminar, having a training seminar available to the public would be a great idea.
I'm also thinking beyond the bigger companies, but to the smaller applicants or potential smaller applicants that maybe they don't have the money to, and this is another theme that I hear, that don't have the money to hire outside consultants, but if they were on a distribution list, a TCEQ, to be notified, or that's probably maybe the most efficient way to notify people of something like that, then that could be very helpful for them. So, all right. Any other issues in the new business area? One more opportunity for the public to comment. Anybody in the audience want to comment? All right, we're drawing to a close then. Any last chance? Anybody on the committee? Any other comments? All right, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. We have a motion to adjourn. We have a motion by Wayne and second by Paul. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you.